Washington Court of Appeals, Division 1 is now in session. The Honorable Lou Lafayette.
Good morning, everyone. Please be seated.
Good guess.
Good guess.
Yes. Thank you. My name is Travis Stearns. I'm here on behalf of Mr. King, and I would like to reserve 3 minutes. I'm going to start just by talking about State v. Ramirez, which is the case that this court published last week that said that because the findings of fact in that case did not support the offender score, that reversal and remand was required. Ramirez is a case that acknowledges Mendoza and, to a large degree as well, Jones, which both require that there be an affirmative acknowledgement by the defendant of facts and information introduced for the purpose of sentencing. So this test, that the judgment and sentence includes the criminal history, is set out in RCW 9.94A 500-1. One, determine the convictions which exist. Two, determine whether any of them wash out. And three, score the remaining offenses. Acknowledgement requires both acknowledging the facts and the conclusions, and in Ramirez, the court stated that it was not enough to just acknowledge the writing.
Let me just confirm
absolutely.
Some facts with you. The court, you're not saying that the court didn't consider his misdemeanor history.
Well, I am saying that the findings of fact don't include those. So whether the court looked at those or not, I mean, obviously the court looked at those. There's a discussion in the record that there were misdemeanors, but there.
So
I'm sorry.
You agree that the misdemeanor history then was before the court, and the court considered it at sentencing.
Yes, but didn't make findings with regard to whether the washout.
I understand your argument. So there were two Appendix Bs, right?
There's one Appendix B that's in the findings of fact, and then there's another one which is not part of the sentencing, which was a plea bargain document. And I think that Ramirez and Jones clearly say that that second one would not apply.
Which case do you rely on the most in? I think what you're saying is that the trial court, even though none of those misdemeanors were relevant, particularly to washout, even defense counsel didn't raise the washout question at all, must be listed in the judgment and sentence as a matter of law.
Well, thank you. I think that the statute requires that all criminal history has to be included.
Which
all criminal history. RCW 9.94A 500, that you include all of the history, including the time served and the release dates, and then you decide whether any of the felony convictions, the scorable offenses. So obviously we have five potentially scorable offenses, right?
Would it have made any difference if the judge had taken Appendix B that was contained in the prosecutor's pre-sentencing materials, stapled it to the judgment and sentence?
Yes, yes. Having that document...
Would it have made a difference in the scoring?
Yes. Having that document probably would make this a case where you could score many of these felonies, but it's not part of the findings of fact. And because
if we remand, what relief is your client going to get?
Well, Ramirez says that remand is for resentencing.
Right. And they'll then be smart enough to attach Appendix B and consider it. And what will you accomplish for your client?
Well, we now have a clear acknowledgement of his history. Should he get into trouble in the future, there is no confusion with regard to what his history is. It may, in fact, be that the
isn't the criminal history, though, determined anew at each sentencing? So how does this help in that regard?
Well, again, you know, the clarity of the judgment and sentence is extremely helpful for future litigants. Knowing what the history is, being able to work through that in a clear way, I think is, again, and also what the statute requires. Ammons, again, says that that sentencing is derived strictly from statute, and the statute clearly states that you have to include this history. This court in Ramirez has affirmed that, as it has, I think, our Supreme Court in Jones and Mendoza, that this is the process that we...
It's not limited to scorable history?
Absolutely not. It's all history. That's what the statute says. It's all history. And in fact, part of the reason for that is so that, when we're sitting here reviewing these, one, the parties have an opportunity to look at the facts and determine whether or not these are scorable. Mm-hmm. And when you don't do that kind of review, mistakes can be made. When you're not looking at these in their original terms, mistakes can be made and things can get scored that don't get scored. And then when we look at this, it's an easy question of whether or not he has the history. And that just makes sense from a policy point of view. I know that this is the policy in many counties to include all of the history, and I know that King County, this is the way that most judgment and sentences in King County look. But I do think that now that there's been some clear analysis on this issue with regard to scorable history, the statute clearly lays out what needs to happen, that this court should remand, follow Ramirez, and remand this back for sentencing.
Maybe I misunderstood what you said earlier, but you're not saying that had the judge actually attached it, that it would have made a difference in his offender score.
Again, if this had been, if the judgment and sentence had included all of the scorable history, it's very likely that it would not have had a change in his offender score. It's because the judgment and sentence does not, that those findings of facts were not made, that it's not included in the judgment and sentence, that this document is insufficient to prove the history, and which is why this court should remand it back for resentencing as it did in Ramirez.
Well, would it really go back for resentencing or simply a non-pro-tunk order attaching this appendix B?
Well, again, Ramirez hits that directly on point. That was the argument that the state made in Ramirez, and this court again said no, it goes back for resentencing. So I think that is the proper procedure and what this court should do, again, as it did in the case that you published last week. I'm out of time, so I'll sit down and come back up.
Good morning. I'm Ian Eath on behalf of the state of Washington representing the respondent. I'll focus on the sentencing issue, I guess, but if you have questions about the uncharged alternative means issue, I'm happy to answer them.
Why shouldn't a trial judge simply ask the defendant at sentencing, do you agree with the criminal history as presented by the state? So it's on the record.
Well, I think
have these kinds of problems.
Well, what appellant is conspicuously ignoring here is that Mr. King submitted a pre-sentence report or a pre-sentence memorandum to the trial court that affirmatively said, I have an offender score of 5. That, from our perspective, is where this debate should end.
But that doesn't answer my question. We wouldn't have any of the arguments we're hearing today if we had on the record an affirmative acknowledgement by the defendant that he agreed with the criminal history presented by the state.
Well, I think we do have such an acknowledgement in the form of his pre-sentence statement that said, I have an offender score of 5.
You can get to 5 a number of different ways. If we had a definitive statement, yeah, that's right. Everything that they say I was convicted of, I was convicted of.
That would help, but I don't think it's necessary here. I think the opinions that have come down from the Supreme Court, I'm specifically referring to Hunley for the most recent example, says that all that needs to be on the record to relieve the state of its burden of proof on the offender score is some affirmative acknowledgement that offender score exists.
Sometimes lawyers recommend clients do more than the minimum because it saves them money in the long run.
I'm sorry, I misunderstood your question.
Well, you're telling me that's the minimum you can get away with. I'm suggesting there's something that takes 15 seconds at trial or at sentencing that avoids an appeal issue in every case.
Well, I think that would be convenient.
You're getting a lot of pushback and resistance from you, and I have a hard time understanding that as a taxpayer.
Well, here's what happened in this case, is the defendant went to trial and was convicted of the crime. And then he went to sentencing and he said, yes, State of Washington, yes, Your Honor, I have an offender score of 5. What I would like you to do is to give me an exceptional sentence below the standard range, which I acknowledge, or I would like you to give me a DOSA, a drug alternative sentence. He time and again acknowledged his offender score. So the practical effect here is that the state was allowed to rely on his affirmative acknowledgement of his offender score being 5 and submit that to the court. What Mr. King is averring is that the law requires that on the Appendix B or on the findings itself on the J&S that there be a recitation of every single conviction that prohibits
and
washing.
Relying on RCW 994A 500, and part of that section says if the court is satisfied by a preponderance of the evidence that the defendant has a criminal history, the court shall specify the convictions it has found to exist.
Right.
Is that limited to felonies, or does that include his criminal history in total?
Well, I think that what RCW 94A 500 says is that it shall make a note of the convictions that exist,
right,
meaning that count towards the offender score.
And where's that language?
Well, I think that it could be fairly interpreted as such.
If, as in this case, misdemeanors could conceivably have an impact on what his offender score is, why would we have that? Why would the statute include that limitation?
I guess what the question is whether the misdemeanors that prohibit washout,
right,
need to be included in the J&S. But to take that to extension, you would also not only have to put the raw conviction of his felonies, but you would also have to attach and include as part of your findings of fact his entire incarceration history, including his post-incarceration.
As I recall, the prosecutor's office used to do that. They don't do that anymore?
Well, it's part of the Appendix B.
But it wasn't in this case.
It was, in fact, part of the Appendix B that the prosecutor proffered in its pre-sentence report. What Mr. King is saying is that because the judgment and sentence document itself does not have, as Judge Lau pointed out, the attachment that has the entire history dating back to, in this case, a couple of decades, I believe.
So there wouldn't be any problem with actually doing that. I mean, it's doable because, it was actually done in this case. It just wasn't attached. So it's an easily doable thing.
Well, it may be doable, but it's not particularly necessary. I don't think the statute requires it.
Well, if it had been done in this case, we wouldn't be here, would we?
Well, I don't think, if it had been done in this case, true, but our position is it didn't need to be because the defendant, in submitting a pre-sentence report that said, yes, I agree my offender score is 5, affirmatively acknowledged that his offender score is 5, and then the sentencing proceeded. So what you've got is a situation where, take, for example, a plea agreement.
Is there a distinction between acknowledging that your offender score is 5 and acknowledging your criminal history?
I don't think there's a distinction in the law. I think he's saying, yes, I agree with my criminal history that my offender score is 5. It's one and the same thing. And to take the example of a plea, for example, if you're required to only look at the four corners of a judgment and sentence to determine whether the record is sufficient of an affirmative acknowledgement, then that discounts the plea agreement, which is part of the plea but not part of the judgment and sentence, wherein the defendant says, yes, I affirmatively acknowledge that my offender score is as the state.
Is this J&S simply an anomaly? In other words, is it widespread that the misdemeanors or criminal history that doesn't matter to the offender score, do you typically leave that off now? Is that a new event?
I don't see that as new. I mean, there's nothing in this judgment and sentence document that appears to me to be anything unusual.
Well, I'm asking about your historical practice.
Well, I can only speak to the time that I've been here in the prosecutor's office.
So you never,
I don't see anything. I don't see a recitation of the misdemeanors that prevent washout on the document. And I would also point out that Ramirez doesn't actually so hold. Ramirez doesn't say you need to include the misdemeanors that prevent washout. What Ramirez dealt with was a situation in a domestic violence case where the misdemeanors that actually scored were not included in the judgment and sentence. It's a different animal.
If you're writing the opinion we have to write to explain the result, what rule of statutory construction do you rely upon to interpret 994A500 to not require all of the criminal history?
Well, the statutory construction of 994A500 says that the judge shall make the convictions that exist part of the record. It doesn't specify that the judge needs to write them onto the J&S, including his entire dissertation of the incarceration history.
How else would he make it part of the record?
by putting it on the record. I mean, the statute also...
Reading it in front of the court reporter or recording device?
That would help, but I don't think that's necessary because the statute, if you look at...
You're saying what's necessary, and I'm trying to figure out what rule of law you want us to follow to read the statute the way you're urging.
What I'm saying...
We have to write it down and explain how we agreed with you if we do, and I haven't heard you proffer a rule of construction that would allow us to give these words a meaning other than the one that appears on the page.
What I would say, Your Honor, respectfully, is that the statute requires that the judge acknowledge the offender score and the convictions that affect the offender score on the record.
Is that what the statute says? Those convictions that affect the offender score or the criminal history that the judge found?
I don't think that the criminal history that does not affect the offender score is relevant. So what is really key is that
so
the judge...
So we get to rewrite the statute?
I don't think you need to rewrite the statute, Your Honor. If you look further on in the statute also specifies that part of the record that the court sends up to the Department of Corrections is not only the judgment and sentence itself, but the sentencing memorandums of the parties. So that would include the defendant's affirmative acknowledgement of his offender score being 5.
I stopped at an inappropriate point. It says the court shall specify the convictions it has found to exist, and then it goes on to say that all this information shall be part of the record.
That's
so
right.
So you can't just somehow the judge has to not only make the findings, they have to be part of the record. So when it comes up on appeal, we have it. When it goes to Department of Corrections, they have it. And that didn't happen in this case, did it?
No, I think it did, because part of the record, as I said, as part of the statute, is the sentencing memorandum of the defendant is part of the record that goes up.
How do we know the judge found that to be accurate?
Well, I think the record shows that the judge questioned the state about the criminal history of the defendant, and the defendant didn't interject and say, no, that's wrong, and I know that that's... not enough.
There's a body of law that says that the absence of a finding means the court didn't find that fact.
Well,
how do we reconcile your position with that?
I'm out of time, but the record includes more than just the four corners of the judgment and sentence. Thank you.
So I think that, again, what the court should be looking for is that whether or not the judgment and sentence includes the facts and information, and that's the language that each of these cases that have interpreted this have said, the facts and information. And I think it's important to recognize that judgments and sentences are prepared by the state, that they come to the court, in this case, likely pre-printed, as in my experience, in every case, pre-printed. And that honestly, this is not a burden. This is not a challenge to satisfy this statute. Ford requires that says that the state bears the burden of proving by preponderance of the evidence what the judgment the facts and information of the criminal history is. Ammon says that sentencing is derived strictly from statute. And then if we look at the statute, 9.94A 500, we see clearly what needs to be included, and that is the criminal history, not just what the state has determined are the felonies that count, but the criminal history. And I don't know how you interpret that any other way than this way. And my experience outside of King County is that it is not interpreted any other way than this way generally. That there are some counties that do it this way, but the majority of counties do not.
Do you know the practice in King County? I'll ask you the same question. What's the practice in King County in terms of including all the criminal history?
Mr. Eth is correct that this is not an anomaly. This is how you would generally see a judgment and sentence coming out of King County. Now, it may have been different when you were on the bench in King County, but my understanding now is that this is the way.
I think it's that new millennial generation.
But didn't the sentences used to have an Appendix B attached to them? And didn't the Appendix B used to include all of the criminal history, including misdemeanors supervision violations and commitments back to incarceration and so forth? Didn't it used to include all of
them? I think if that were included in this document, we'd be talking about burglar's tools, or you probably wouldn't have asked me to come here to talk about burglar's tools, because I do think that it is not a particularly challenging burden to answer this question of what is his criminal history. It is available on a defendant criminal history. It can be put forward, and the court can affirm that and make the written findings of fact and conclusions of law that are required.
Just done differently if there's a plea versus there's a trial? Because apparently when it was thought that there was going to be a plea in this case, they prepared all that information. When it turned into a trial, it was not included.
I do think that that might be a difference, because I think that if when you're signing the plea agreement, that's going to include you've got the acknowledgement of the score, which you don't have here. I am out of time. Thank you very much.